The following excerpts from the audiobook, Healing the Spirit-Matter Split, an invitation to wake down and fulfill your divinely human destiny, by Samuel Bonder and Laurel Erica, is a sampler from a 4-CD set available in March 2006. It's copyright by Samuel Bonder. You're welcome to share it freely.
Foreword by Arjuna Ardag, author of The Translucent Revolution, How People Just Like You Are Waking Up and Changing the World. It was the best of times, it was the worst of times, wrote Charles Dickens as the first sentence of The Tale of Two Cities. He was referring to the times of the French Revolution, a time of radical social change. He might just as well have been talking about the days of radical change we are passing through today. We are in a phase transition in collective consciousness, the likes of which we have never seen before. We face challenges as a race, the likes of which we have never faced before. Global warming, wars of one fundamentalism set against another, global economic disparity and blatant opportunism, running out of oil, need I go on? Whatever your political, religious, or scientific persuasion, everyone seems to agree that we are moving closer to a crisis. We are also seeing the first sproutings of a new kind of consciousness, one that is grounded in the direct realization of oneness rather than separation, one which has the capacity to know reality in a deeper way than through the rigid beliefs of mind. This new kind of consciousness has to be clearly understood and differentiated from what has come before. The gentle revolution we see today is not simply a regurgitation of what we have called enlightenment in the past. To differentiate contemporary mystics from their predecessors, I call them translucents. They are neither fully opaque nor totally transparent. They allow light to pass through them while remaining fully involved and participating in a modern world. There are several important distinctions which make this renaissance of awakening unprecedented and which warrant sitting up and paying attention. First, today's translucents are not interested in transcending and leaving the body, but in waking down into the body. This awakened consciousness is delighted to include sexuality, relationship, parenting, business, and social and political action as expressions of awakening rather than distractions from it. Secondly, translucents balance masculine and feminine energy. What we have called spiritual in the past might just as well be called masculine interpretation of spiritual life. It has emphasized renunciation, working toward a goal in the future, and the importance of effort and discipline. The feminine is more oriented to fully embracing what is already here, in this moment, and loving and living it in its totality. Third, the revolution of spirit we witness today is not hierarchical. It is not about the coming of another Buddha as a man who will awaken us all, but it is symbolized by Maitreya, the friend. This time, the wheel of Dharma is not turned by one savior, but by you and me, by friend meeting friend. The second coming of Christ is the arising of Christ consciousness in every man and woman. Fourth, translucents display a fresh and dynamic embracing of a paradox in their relationship to the ways of the world. They see human society with detachment and humor. They accept the imperfection of things as inevitable. In this way, they remind us of Buddha or Lao Tzu, and at the same time, they are passionate in their willingness to show up and make a difference. In this way, they remind us of Che Guevara or of Gandhi. I have spent many years researching, interviewing, and writing about contemporary translucence. I have seen this kind of consciousness arising in myriad different flavors and locations, but I am hard-pressed to find a fresher, more integral example than in Samuel Bonder and the work he does together with his community. Samuel's vision is borne out not only in his writings, like this book you're reading or listening to, but it is vibrantly obvious in his marriage, in the way he relates with people, in the way he offers you a cup of tea. Samuel is not only writing about waking down in mutuality, the way he moves through each of his days demonstrates it. On those grounds, I endorse Samuel as a human being as much as a writer. He writes very well, don't get me wrong. But I know so many prolific wordsmiths whose words inspire and soar only to leave one disappointed and confused by the human being who wrote them. In Samuel's case, it's the other way around. It is his natural and spontaneous embodiment which is impressive. His words are a transmission from that embodiment. Having drunk his tea, sat with him and his wife Linda, and frequently been the recipient of his kind, attentive, and generous heart, I offer you a 5-star recommendation for Samuel and his vision as high integrity spirituality.
Preface. When matter becomes as real, divine, and important as spirit to you. Since ancient times, both the Enlightenment traditions of the East and the religious traditions of the West have sprung from and perpetuated a chasm at the very core of human life and awareness. That rift is so foundational to postmodern people that even our secular sciences and our ways of sensing and knowing the world are suffused by it. In this book, I call that chasm the spirit-matter split. Why and even how it came to be are not questions I address here at any length. My sole real concern is to introduce you to a pragmatic process whereby growing numbers of people are healing that split in themselves and with one another. This process, which I call waking down in mutuality, permits seekers of Eastern-style spiritual enlightenment to fulfill their quest directly to their heart's deep satisfaction. At the same time, they and others who engage this path discover that finite matter is every bit as real, divine, and important as infinite spirit. This discovery is not abstract. They see starkly, with great relief, that their own material, personal, finite lives are that real, divine, important, and truly spiritual. In fact, ending the ancient holy war against earthly life has a paradoxical effect for many. It does not weaken or sabotage, but rather empowers our human capacity to commune with and realize infinite spirit. In that passage, we not only feel the presence of spirit, we become that great oneness of spirit and matter, unshakably.
And now a wide open invitation to awaken. What if you didn't have to travel to distant places? Adopt a dramatically different lifestyle, forgo the pleasures of the flesh, or even heal your negative patterns in order to reach nirvana? What if you could get there essentially as you are today, regardless of your flaws, and within a relatively short period of time? Such radical notions contradict most spiritual traditions. But after decades of intensive research and relentless practice, Harvard-educated Samuel Bonder broke with tradition and guru to blaze his own trail to nirvana. In the process, he widened the pathway for everyone else while upturning many outdated but still pervasive notions about what it takes to wake up. Ever since his own profound transformation, now over 13 years ago, Samuel has been using his discoveries and his catalytic transmission of being force to enable hungry people around the globe to undergo their own conscious, embodied, irreversible awakenings within an abbreviated time frame. Assisting him in this extraordinary undertaking are his beloved wife, Linda Groves Bonder, and a growing number of other compassionate individuals who awakened with Samuel's assistance and were trained by him to teach. Can you explain how you and the other teachers are able to precipitate awakenings in others?
Yeah. I'm reminded, a great Kundalini yogi once told a prospective student who was inquiring of his capacities, "You don't teach it if you can't do it." I wouldn't have dreamed of attempting to transmit and teach this awakening process if I weren't, quote-unquote, doing it all the time. First of all, I was already living in this realized condition continuously, without the slightest effort. It was my natural state. Second, a very important additional factor, there was increasing evidence in my interactions with friends that my condition was becoming, so to speak, contagious. My presence was already tending to prompt inner openings and changes in other people. My colleagues and I have applied these same criteria in our teacher training program quite rigorously. Everyone who is authorized to teach our work has well demonstrated that she or he is innately established in this very oneness, or what I call onlyness, and that her or his presence tends to instigate similar conscious energetics in others. This intensity of being becomes a spontaneously catalytic influence for others. It allows us to radiate a radical, integrative, whole-body awakeness, 24/7, regardless of what we are doing in our ordinary personhood. We don't certify people to teach our work formally until they're already effortlessly radiating this thing in ways that are affecting others. At that stage, they need to learn how to manage it, or the current of their own transmission and teaching process can, in effect, back up in them like some kind of mother's milk of the heart.
Are you and the teachers gurus?
No and yes. No in the sense that we do not hold or require others to hold a view of us as somehow existentially superior to those we serve, which many gurus do. But yes, in the simple sense of a guru as a teacher, who also may provide energetic help toward the aspirant's desired transformation. Also, unlike many traditional teachings that through their socio-cultural dynamics and political protocols tend to sabotage the very illuminations they are supposed to cultivate, our approach is vigorously democratic and pragmatic. We are results-oriented. Traditional schools of the most radical conscious awakeness tend to hail from the old worlds of Asia and the Middle East. Sad to say, they also unconsciously perpetuate the cultural values and customs of old world monarchies and feudal domains. Thus today we have tens of thousands of 21st century Westerners still trying to squeeze themselves into the boxes of ancient and medieval Asian or Middle Eastern cultural ways, trying their best to be loyal subjects of traditional gurus who often act and are treated like spiritual kings or queens. In our work, we certainly honor the profound gifts of elders in the process of transformation, but we keep the process significantly aspirant-centered, and we try to keep a laser eye open for all the ways we might inadvertently sabotage or undermine the effectiveness of the work by unconsciously replicating old-world styles of teacher-student or guru-disciple relating. These democratic and pragmatic principles of our work go hand in hand with our emphasis on mutuality. As a matter of principle, our teacher-student relationships are built on the basis of trust and open communications.
What kinds of feedback do you receive from the expatriates of other paths? I know you get refugees from a lot of other teachers and processes. Mm-hmm. So what do they say?
Well, you know, since we're adding some interlinear comments here, I'll also say, by way of prefacing this, what we have in the book, that they also have expatriates from this path come to them.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's a natural part of the process. So I think that's an important acknowledgement. And at the same time, it is true that we have attracted a lot of people who haven't found the fulfillments they needed elsewhere and have been able to hear. And to go on with the text here, some of the things we receive appreciation for are precisely what I've been describing. Mutuality, accountable and accessible teachers, a process that actually allows them to complete their quest to awaken, and a genuine, consistent yes to their deepest aspirations. Aspirants also cite our fundamental acceptance and allowance of all their stuff, including the shadow parts of the being that so many schools treat like the plague. They speak of initiations and realizations that aren't ritualized, don't require mental belief or rest on dogma, but instead prove to be grounded, real, and self-sustaining. They get the sense that they themselves really matter, that they are really as important as divine, as real, as precious, as any of the teachers, books, and cultural artifacts of the process. In some ways more important, in fact, they find an actually aspirant-oriented approach. If they stay with this work, they find much more even than that. They learn the awesome, fierce, and, to our view, virtually unprecedented self-disciplines of daring, recognizing, and discerning the realities of their situation, and making and persevering in choices they often never could have imagined they would be confronted by. These and other awakened practices have nothing to do with prepackaged techniques of any kind. Again, quoting Linda, the cookie-cutter practices you can learn about abstractly and then impose on yourself by dint of mind and will. No, these spontaneous disciplines of enlightened living can come into play only when one embraces awakened mutuality, which is a whole other life than just trying to be a good, moral, even feelingly sensitive spiritual person who cares for others. So, people discover the wide open Wild West of learning how to live plugged in continuously to the evolutionary power of the universe right in their own hearts, while really encountering, making room for, and cooperating with others who are doing the same thing. That's mutuality. It's like becoming a supernova while still walking around in human shape, complete with a full package of messy human patterns and issues. And at the same time, learning how to shine with others, not just at or on them, and how not to burn them with the acuity of your perception or the fierceness of your own passionate expression, or to be burned by any of their own acuity and fierceness any more than you can help. It's a whole other life. We make the point out front that we know we're bringing to consciousness all of our shadow material together, and the work is often unpleasant and difficult. It's a workout. But in general, people find a sanctuary here from much less conscious and more dogmatized approaches that somehow beckon them forward with one hand, but firmly press or pummel them backward with the other.
One of the ultimate questions in considering what it costs to awaken spiritually: is it safe to have sex before awakening?
That's along with lifting soul above soil, which was contributed by you, Laurel.
Good memory.
I love.
Thank you.
Because I remember being so moved by it. This question of yours has cracked me up every time I've read it ever since, because it somehow really says what nobody wants to actually ask, although it often does get asked and answered, as we'll talk about here.
Do you recommend that while people are striving to awaken, they abstain from romantic relationships?
No, I definitely do not. In fact, I believe that kind of recommendation, which comes from either implicitly or explicitly, it comes from many resources for transcendental awakening, many traditions. This is a long-standing assumption, whether it's liberation from the wheel of birth and death or some kind of enlightenment or some form of spiritual salvation. Implicitly or explicitly, the message has been mostly for a long time, if you really want that, better give up sex and everything that goes along with it, including family, relationship, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Definitely give up sex. So, to continue, I believe that kind of recommendation does great harm to most seekers, who often become confused, conflicted, and divided within themselves when trying to follow it. Hardly anyone can pull it off. Most come to feel inadequate and incapable of both intimate love and spiritual awakening. Whether they are unattached or householders, they often view their human longings for intimate connection as proof of their spiritual inferiority and inherent inability to do the supposedly real awakening work. Having said that, I can also say that the more one does go through stages of conscious awakening and embodiment in mutuality, the more one is equipped to create and sustain wonderfully nurturing, transformative relationships. But in my work with people, I've never said, quote, hang back from sexuality and just work on your conscious awakening. Then once you're awake, you'll be that much better to handle love and sex without losing your freedom, end quote. Those rare few who can endure forcibly splitting from their natural bodily instincts in order to lead a celibate lifestyle almost always become products and purveyors of that split. Very few people are naturally inclined to concentrate on the more spiritual side of their evolution before seriously trying to find intimate love and to develop a skilled and superlative partnership. Most people want love, and they want it now, or certainly as soon as possible. To me, these desires are divinely human prompts toward the most fully activated evolutionary liberation. They're not mere unfortunate cravings of souls still mired in material distraction. So in our work, we strongly support and encourage people's desire for love and intimacy, along with their desire to awaken into conscious freedom. We help them to see that this is part and parcel of their total awakening and mutuality, and not in any way in conflict with it. We also invite them to make use of the support we offer through our community, so they can grow ever more conscious through connecting more deeply with others. This is the afterword to Healing the Spirit Matter Split, entitled The Split, The Core Mystery, Original Sin, and the Embodied Bodhisattva, All Hands on Deck. So those who get on with healing the spirit matter split by waking down in mutuality, sooner or later move into conscious fulfillment of a divinely human destiny of service. They discover what their life purpose is in a whole new way. Those pursuits become their own most fulfilling expression of the genius of being. And in living out their greatest personal passions, they are always giving to others and the world. They may not look anything like spiritual teachers. They may not utter a word that sounds anything like what I am saying in this book. But one way or another, they, we all, become embodied bodhisattvas. We're here for the whole, the totality. We are here not just for ourselves, but for each and all. From my perspective, that's a very good thing, and there's not a moment to waste. When I was awakening, my then mentor had a phrase that stuck with me, all hands on deck. Life on earth is becoming desperate for humanity to awaken to its at once spiritual and material nature, capital S and capital M. and to responsibly discharge its stewardship for life itself. Way back when I first started my work, I wrote that dissociated and disembodied, quote, let me out of here, unquote, spirituality is as toxic and dangerous to life as industrial pollution and genocide. Nothing's happened to change my mind. Instead, in every arena of human life and culture, crises are coming to a head. And those of us who have been dedicated to quest for spiritual enlightenment need now more urgently than ever before to get past the seeking, get on with the finding, and then roll up our sleeves and fulfill our destinies as awakened servants of everyone and everything. Buddhist or not, we need to get beyond the vow and seeking stage and get on to the realization and fulfillment stage of our lives as bodhisattvic awakened servants. We need to unravel all the twisted knots of our previous perceptions and practices that were built upon the hidden spirit-matter split at the core of our beings. But that unraveling needs to take place in the midst of our awakened service, not, in effect, in the comfort of our own homes before we ever step outside into the streets of serving. Waking down in mutuality provides humane, effective technologies for many people to accomplish just these transformations. Along with my growing number of one-time students who are now colleagues, I invite you to come find out more and see whether this work sings to your own heart and soul as a viable path. Discover whether you yourself can, with our help, heal the root of the spirit-matter split, enter the paradox of life in the conscious core mystery, and reveal your own unique expression of the genius of being in giving to others and the world. Humanity needs you, you with a capital Y, to get here, capital H, and do your part. Life on Earth needs you to get here and do your part. It's not just that you can make a difference, you must. If you don't make the difference that you know or sense you are here to make, even if you don't yet have a clue what it might be, who will make that difference? No one else can fill your shoes. No one else can take your place. No one else can plant your staff in the ground, sing your song in the air, light your fire for all to see, take your seat in the lodge of life. The spirit-matter split is not an unbreakable curse on humanity. If it appeared in a specific epoch of human evolution, as I suggest earlier in this essay, then it may well be that now is the time when it not only can but must be healed in human beings, body by body and throughout our whole species. This can be done, but it requires the concerted efforts of great numbers of us over time. It is now possible for humanity to rise again after, quote-unquote, the fall. And the paradox of that arising is first we must settle down into the capital M material reality of our humanness and learn beyond all doubting that it presents no obstruction whatsoever to the spiritual realization of our divinity.
You have been listening to excerpts of the audiobook CD Healing the Spirit-Matter Split by Samuel Bonder and Laurel Erica. To order the complete 4-CD set or for more information, please visit www.samuelandlinda.com. That's SAMIELANDLINDA.com. Or call toll-free 1-888-657-7020, extension 81. Thank you for listening.